Let's get started. The agenda today is continuing the discussion of the anatomy of hypertextual search engine and also the Monika Hensinger paper on problems in the various ways, various challenges in designing search engines. Okay, that's sort of open-ended. As long as you have things to talk about, we'll talk about that, and then you know, when we reach a plateau, then I will go to the next topic, which is clustering. You know, we've been talking about clustering in the context of search results. I know several of you probably have heard of clustering in various other things, but we still have to do it to make sure that everybody is on the same page. So clustering as a discussion topic would be probably second part of today's class and maybe one more class. Next Tuesday, and then from Thursday onwards we would start recommendation systems. Okay, I haven't actually put the slides up for the clustering, but you can download them from the F05 lecture notes as of now, in case you're actually going to look at them today. Okay, so let's and then these things, make sure that you fill them and return them. Actually, let me see. Give them all to Tiffany there. You collect them. Okay. So, and then you are going to be, since you're sitting in without doing homework, you're going to tabulate them for me, so that you can write comments if you want, and then I won't see your comments. And she's not my student. There are other people who are my students, and so they'll tell me who wrote what. So in case you need to write comments, feel free to do that. And if there is no comment, then all you need to do is tabulate what are the answers for which of the questions, and then, you know, and then if not, just type the comments. Okay, so give it to Tiffany. Okay. Any questions? I mean, any comments? Yes, sir. Okay, guys, we're starting the discussion, I guess. So, presume.
Suppose a page contains different types of related topics. Mm-hmm. How can you anchor, use the maximum use of anchor text, because Google uses the anchor text?
So, I do not completely understand the question. What do you mean?
I mean, like, an anchor text, you have something about the page.
Mm-hmm.
But what if the page contains different data?
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, basic idea is that if some people say, you know, certain things about you, some other people say certain other things about you, all we are saying is all of those are part of you. Okay, so if somebody says about this page, this is a great politics page, and somebody else says this is a great page that shows how to use style sheets correctly, right? And these are completely different characterizations of the page, and yet it is reasonable to bring that page up as a relevant page if you are talking about politics or about style sheets. So I'm not quite sure whether I got your concern. Okay, now the trickier issue is, how do you make sure that people characterize you right? Of course not, you cannot. I mean, that's the whole point. That's why we have Google bombs or whatever, which basically, you know, it's clearly not the case that anybody would like their page to come up when miserable failure is typed. It happened only because you cannot control what people say about you. Okay. Yes.
On last class, we were discussing about the and you said that increases the rank. For example, in a home page, you just have a stack called home or research or something. So the anchor words are not really indicating anything over there.
No. In fact, the link structure has nothing to do with anchorness. See, the anchor text is used to improve the content-based similarity retrieval of the page. Okay, so there are two different things that go on even in like the page rank that Google talks about, right? One is content-based similarity. So if somebody says I think that their classic point that they make in their paper is at the height of Netscape being the greatest browser on earth, the word browser did not appear on the main page of Netscape. Okay, and yet it's the most important browser. You know, so if you look for browser, that should have been the first page. So clearly, however, everybody who are pointing to Netscape did use the word browser, and so Netscape did come up as relevant to the browser. So if you remember, we are talking about alpha times content similarity plus 1 minus alpha times importance, and the link importance. And we did say if content similarity greater than 0. Because otherwise we will wind up sending pages which are just high in terms of similarity. Okay? So now, if Netscape did get chosen for the query browser, it would have shown up as one of the high pages. But if it never even got chosen, then it will never get high up. And so in that particular case, the fact that there was anchor text helped there. Now, in terms of pages sort of making clusters and pointing to themselves, all that is going to change is this. It's changing just the link importance. Do you see what I'm saying? You can become more and more important and yet nobody picks you. By the way, if you do not want to do this sort of an awkward thing, if content similarity greater than 0, then alpha times content similarity plus 1 minus alpha times link importance, otherwise 0, if you wanted to say that. I mean, if you don't want to say that, if you want to, basically here it is a weighted mean, right? Do you know of any other ways of taking means which automatically make sure that this will happen? Harmonic mean. And when would you talk about harmonic mean? F measure. Okay, remember if you want to combine precision and recall into one single measure, we talked about harmonic mean for precision and recall. Okay. So you could do weighted harmonic mean, and that way you don't have to make the special case. Because if any of them are 0, harmonic mean is 0. But that's one way. Okay, so I was just trying to make a connection to something else that you guys should know, which is this harmonic mean. Yes?
Couple of things regarding the page rank calculation.
Uh-huh.
First thing is, like, they seem to have missed out the 1 by n in the first term in the formula.
I don't know where.
It's 1 minus d upon n. It should have been by n. When you derive it from the matrix, m star matrix and r equal to m star times r minus 1, there should be a 1 minus.
Yeah, okay, so it is the case that there were variety of page rank variants. There's one in this, there's the one in fact in the other paper, which by the way is up now because somebody showed me where it is still living, and so I put it up. That has a slightly different version. The question is this completely changing what page rank should mean?
Yeah, it's like because they say in the next step that all the page ranks will add up to 1.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you don't put a by n term in this formula, it doesn't add up to 1.
Okay, yeah. But I mean, so it's a detail issue, right?
It's like a bugger. And then other thing is like, they say damping factor is the probability at each page, the random surfer gets bored and requests a random
reset.
But that's, 1 minus d is the probability, right? It's not d.
D is the probability with which it.
No, but I mean, these are conventions. You can define whichever way as long as you stick
no,
to.
No, but then in the formula, it's like. D
no,
times
I just need. I need to look at this. Sorry.
Like this term is multiplied with D, and then there is a 1 minus D here. So D is the probability with which it visits the next page. I mean, visit the link, and 1 minus D by N is the probability with which it restarts randomly, right?
Find out the number of links going out of that. I think there's a bug in this formula. I have to look at this.
So it's the term which comes here is the probability with which it starts randomly, right? The first.
No, but they're setting D equal to 0.85. So they do mean that you do with 0.85, you follow what is on the page.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what they did, right?
Yeah,
D
but then
times
here they say that D is the probability with which it
so
starts
that basically, that's basically, so you're talking about inconsistencies within the
within
paper.
The paper yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, let's not talk about their inconsistencies. Let's talk about much higher issues. Do people understand? I'm apparently, basically, he found that there are inconsistencies in that up-dub-dub paper. Which is fine, as long as we know how to compute page rank. And so with damping factor, I mean, you know, by default, you follow what's on the page. And with default probability, P. And 1 minus P, you do something different, which is reset probability, a reset distribution. Yes?
No, just the thing I noticed in that paper, they said that the implementation that they had, it said all positions higher than 4095 are labeled 4096.
Hmm.
I'd like to know if they're still following it. If we know
we don't know. Okay, first of all. So if you guys pay me like a couple of dollars, I'll send a mail to Sergi and say maybe, you know, they'll show up and
it's
tell
interesting
me.
Interesting, because we discussed this in the intro lecture or mm-hmm. around that if you want to put something about your page, it's better to have an abstract kind of thing at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is what is more likely to get stored. But it's surprising that, you know, if they still follow it.
There are bunches of things they do. For example, anything beyond, one other thing they do is they damp down the frequency of words, right? If you have a particular word occurring more than some number of times, then you just, is that the point you're making right now? I mean,
the point I'm making is they're only looking up to, say, 4095 positions.
Yeah, but I believe that's no longer the case because I think they wound up doing it there at that time because they actually had machine poverty. So they did not have as many machines to store this stuff, right? And so there is no reason to do it from the point of view of space because now we can basically have clusters. But however, appearing earlier should be given more importance than things appearing lower down in the page, which sort of makes sense because if it's not in the first screen full of any page, you probably are not likely to find it as important, and which is sort of, because again, the idea there is that you're assuming that these pages are written by humans, not by Martians, and humans have the same social convention. Okay, if you have something important to say, and you write a 10-page paper, you better say the most important part of it in the very first page. In fact, we also have abstracts where you actually try to talk about some version of it. Okay, so if in fact it's only there somewhere down there, then in essence you probably didn't mean it to be that important. Yes.
Yeah, but that is specific to your corpus. I mean, if you talk about academic documents.
No, but this is true for any.
No, no, but if
this is true. If you're giving State of the Union address, right? There is this. People remember what is said in the beginning. People remember what is said in the end, because in the end you are supposed to crap, and then in the beginning it's the beginning. Middle people go to sleep. Okay, so it's understood. It's not just academic papers, you know.
For example, if I'm searching a corpus like say Shakespeare or any book or anything, and I want a specific quotation that appears somewhere in the middle.
No, again, that's why I said you cannot only. So there are two different ways. One is to say that any occurrence of any word beyond 4096 characters has zero weight. Now the only reason you would do it is, I mean, obviously that can't be justified. The only reason they did it is because they had to only keep small amount, you know, keep the index size small. But I could still say that the importance of occurring in the first page is higher than the importance of occurring in lower down. Now, all we are saying is if you are looking for a particular couple of words, right, which is part of a quotation, now this quotation appears, I mean these words appear in the 15th page in one page, in the first page in another page, I think it's reasonable to say that the first page one should be shown before the 15th page one. If there is nobody and there's only one page which has it occurring and it's occurring in the 15th page, then you have to show it. Okay. So it's not that the middle of the speech is completely contentless, it is that if you want to increase the chances that people will remember it, put it in the beginning or in the end. Right? So actually that's sort of an interesting point that all search engines have to deal with, which is there are social conventions that people use in writing these pages. And this also includes in the other paper you looked at, they talked about the notion of presentation regularities. Okay, it's not that people said, I mean, it's not that, you know, some search engine decreed that pages should be that way. It is that pages just evolved organically to look like that. Okay, there are headings and there are panel, you know, certain ideas catch on and, you know, pages have these kinds of regularities. As long as they have it, it makes sense to use them. Okay, when, you know, when you put something in bigger size, it does not, in the NLP sense of the word, it does, you know, in the natural language processing sense, just because you increase the font size of a word, it does not change its meaning. Right? And yet, it does change its meaning to the humans because they think there's more than just the word. The size of the word, the blinkingness of the words, all of these matter. Okay? Again, I'm not trying to justify anything on this paper. I'm basically hoping that people have read enough of the paper that you can connect what you thought should be there in the paper, I mean, as to end-to-end design of a search engine, to what you actually found as them doing. And in fact, it is interesting that, for example, they cut all these corners. What else? Yes. Yeah, but I mean, it's not, all we are saying is it's a parametric model. So, in fact, there is a question that I used to ask, and maybe I should just add it to the current homework, because that's the right place to add it, which is list down all the fudge factors. And if you are paying attention to him, you know most of them. You know, what are all the parameters that anatomy of Google, I mean, what are the, you know, arbitrary constants that somebody had to set for, you know, the Google search engine of 1998 to work. Okay, now the most important one everybody knows of is that alpha and 1 minus alpha. But that's not the only thing. Like they, for example, said, we take first few characters. Why is 4096 important? Well, other than the fact that it's a nice power of 2, why else, why do you care about 4096? Should it change some other different one? Okay. And some of them are important, some of them are less important, and all of them are being set by humans. And now presumably you can improve them by learning techniques, okay, but it's not at all clear whether actually they use learning techniques to improve or not. In fact, there is a piece in this paper where they talk about compression, right, which they probably no longer care about as much because now that they are no longer grad students. They are desperately trying to compress the hit list. Such that it will fit in the, you know, smallest amount of space. And they were talking about these coding strategies. And one is Huffman coding, one is hand coding, one is this, one is that. And, you know, clearly, in fact, you can learn these what's the best optimal coding given a particular distribution. Now that's a nice place where you could do learning, and but is it worth doing or not? How important is it? If you write down top 10 things that they should deal with, where do these fall? You know, obviously some of them are less important. Okay, but it is interesting that all we put together is like in broad outline some of the parametric model of how to put things together, but there are still all these issues of what is the exact weights you should put. So even this is not just for this, even authorities hubs model, right? You know, for example, that maybe you want to give more weight to links which are on topic than links which are off topic. Now, how do you decide how much weight to give? And how much higher is the weight of things that are appearing in title versus in the body? All we know is partial ordering, we know. That means title should be higher than the body one. Okay. Yes. Can the search engine do it, you mean?
Yes.
Well, so there are actually two answers to this. The answer that you're looking for, I'll give it second, okay? But I would also say that why would you want to relearn automatically stuff that people are dying to tell you if only you listen to them? Okay, so what's in it for us to actually learn the fact that things in bigger letters are important, when everybody is happy to give you this information? Do you understand what I'm saying? That's point one. So, in fact, I think for a search engine, the stuff that we know about the conventions of the world, if there are obviously known conventions, you may as well throw it in. You know, you don't get a badge for having reinvented it yourself, you know. But thankfully, there is lots and lots of other places where the conventions of the conventions are not obvious at all. You know, for example, for an individual user who gave a very imprecise query and started yelling at you because you're not giving good answers, there is clearly a place where you could learn from their what they liked versus what they not liked to learn exactly what they must have meant given when they gave this query. Okay, so. I guess learning has great place in search engines, and in fact, I guess all the main search engines, Yahoo Research Labs has a huge number of machine learning people on their staff, and Google has, apart from whatever they have in Mountain View, they started another research lab at Pittsburgh, which is just data mining and machine learning people. Okay, now. They're not necessarily using it just for, I mean, they're doing it for all sorts of, you know, computing various types of parameters. But I would still not want to learn things that are easily available. Unless you are interested in psychological theories of how do conventions come up, which you could be interested in. But if you're a search engine company, why do you care? You know, I mean, people are the way they are. So if we can easily write that down, just.
Mm-hmm. I think if Google can learn something and it can know people are yelling at it because this search thing is cheating on Google, then it should be more stable.
Yeah, but all they can do is, so that is an interesting learning strategy, which is, for example, monitoring major changes in page rank of pages and figuring out whether there is something fishy going on. I understand that completely. I just said, I think the example you gave is, if the font is bigger, it must be important. Now, but that most of us sort of agree. So why, you know, I mean, Google doesn't have to be run by Martians. It can be run by humans, even though the skies do look Martian-like sometimes. But, so they can just use that information. But things like who is cheating us in a $8 billion page corpus is harder, and you need monitoring techniques for that. That's more trickier. Yes. Also the variants, what are all the possible variants? So in fact, you know, most search engines, I mean the ones which do information extraction, when we get to information extraction, this becomes important, you know, they are regularly pretty bad, you know, at some percentage of cases in extracting, let's say, for even for technical papers, the titles, the author names, and all that stuff. Because if you can extract it, then essentially you're finding more structure. Okay, even if you did not put it in bigger font, you know, based on the fact that for a paper, normally title occurs at the beginning of the paper. So if you can pick that up from the PDF file, and then remember that, that's very useful. And in fact, most academic search engines like scholar.google do that already. Okay, that's just one example of extraction. And then it turns out in those cases, there is a rule and 10,900 exceptions. And the rule everybody knows, and most people know how to deal with the exceptions, but making humans sit down and write all the exceptions is too painful. Okay, although you would be surprised at how much humans are willing to do if you pay them reasonable amount of money, because they have nothing else to do at home anyway. Okay, so I mean, still people are writing COBOL programs, Fortran programs for a living, and you know, despite the fact that we have higher level languages, we still muck around in C and all those things, because people pay us, we'll do it. Okay, and when we get to this idea of, again, information extraction and also connecting to, if, you know, we talked about it in the beginning of the semester, many sites actually have a database in the background, and then they take the query, submit it to the database, get the structured tuples, convert it into English, and show it to you. Because they think you only understand English, you don't like those tuple brackets, right? But if you actually have, you know, it would be useful for you, the search engine, to actually realize it's a structured tuple. It's not just a piece of text. And so you want to invert what, so they had tuples, you want tuples, but unless you go make a separate API call, normal way they would give you is they'll give you this, you know, crazy English stuff, right? All you need to do is invert that. So they put unnecessary English, you want to remove this unnecessary English. Instead of saying, the example I gave you is, they might know the capitals and the countries. They'll say, tuple begin India, New Delhi. And then the HTML page would say, the capital of India is New Delhi. Okay, and full stop. And you read this and you feel it's in English. Now, somebody else may want to get rid of that and get the two words, India and New Delhi, as the tuple. Now, the problem, of course, is for a few days they will be writing this, and then somebody else will say, you know, there should be some extra space here, or you should have an extra unnecessary word. You know, the capital city of India is New Delhi. And the moment you do that, whoever is converting it automatically will fail. And for the longest time, when, you know, the first wave of internet companies started, there would be people such as you, people with PhDs, whose only job is to write these filters. So you tell your mother and father and wife and husband that I'm working for an internet company, but what are you doing really? You're essentially going and checking, oh my God, these guys changed their interface again, let me rewrite the way I can invert. Okay, so people are there. I mean, there are enough people who are willing to do anything. Okay, what happened to my thing? I'll find it. Okay, other points. Who hasn't spoken? Yes, go ahead. Realize that dangling links, I mean, so that those are the pages. If the page doesn't exist, it will become automatically a sync node in the link graph. Do people understand what I just said? If the page did not actually exist, you only know that people are pointing to this page. Okay? Then essentially, if you make the link graph, there is a node for this page because people are pointing to it. But since the page doesn't actually exist, it clearly cannot make pointers to other people because you don't know, it doesn't exist, okay? So one interesting thing about dangling pages is how, if you read the page rank computation, if you either look at the slides or the paper, the first thing you tend to do is get rid of all the dangling links, okay? So in fact, one easy way to improve, I mean, I'm going to go in like a big cycle before I answer your question because you brought up this dangling links, it's an important issue. So if you have a huge number of pages that you have and you have a large link graph, right, and you want to do efficient computation of page rank, one of the issues we talked about for efficient computation is how to split the link matrix such that you could do this block-based computation. We did that a couple of classes back. But there is this other issue, which is instead of starting with a graph of billion nodes, can I somehow start, you know, remove some pieces and compute only the page rank and the smaller graph and then give the page rank to the larger, the other pieces, like without extra computation, okay? And most people, in fact, the Haveliwala paper basically points out that one idea is to start by removing all sync nodes from the graph upfront. Now, when you remove sync nodes from the graph, there may be new nodes which will become sync nodes, right? Because all you were doing was to point out to a sync node. Now that guy is removed, so you are not pointing to anybody, so you become the sync node. So you continue removing these nodes until you reach a point where no node is a sync node. Okay, when there is no node which is a sync node, then at least we don't have to do this extra step that I was talking about earlier, which is all sync nodes, you make it look as if they are pointing to everybody. So you remove all the sync nodes from consideration. So you sort of got the core of the graph, which is sort of actually doing useful work. They're pointing to people as well as pointed by people. Okay, and just compute the page rank on that. Okay, and then once you do that, then you can actually, using these page ranks, you can just actually update to get the, let me see if I can show you these numbers. Yeah, there. Okay. So they started with 25 million pages, and then after two pruning iterations, they only had 19 million pages left because all the others are essentially sync nodes. And then they only compute the page rank. This is the page rank computation paper that we discussed. Mostly we discussed this in the context of that matrix. I mean, how to efficiently represent the link matrix. But they also do this removing of dangling nodes during the computation. Okay, so dangling nodes are these kinds of things which you cannot live without and you cannot live with. Okay, you really want to avoid using them because they really should not, first of all, if there is a sync node, it will eat up all the page rank, as we pointed out earlier. Okay, and there is no unique distribution anymore the moment you have a real sync node. So you have to play around and say there is no real sync node anyway. If there is a sync node, it's actually pointing to everybody. And what this argument is saying is, get rid of them first. Just look at the core of the graph that is actually pointing to other pieces of the graph. So everybody, I mean, you cannot remove any single sync node and make new sync nodes in this graph. Okay? And then compute the page ranks for them, and then propagate. So if you are a node which is only connected to a bunch of pages, and you've been removed because you are a sync node, now that you know these guys' page ranks, I can compute your page rank directly, as sort of a linear summation. Okay? This is something that's done automatically, and it's something that you guys should consider doing in the project too, because it can speed up page rank calculation. Now, obviously, if you kept it in the graph, you would have gotten a slightly different page rank than if you did it this way. But we already know that the moment you have sync nodes, essentially, their rank is an artificial number. Okay, they actually will have highest rank if you do not make any changes to them, because steady state you wind up getting stuck in one of the sync nodes. Okay. Now the second issue is, I would say they're actually a feature, because even now, first of all, how many of you know whether Google currently allows dangling links or not? I mean, so in the sense, whatever I said here, all this is saying is, during the computation, temporarily ignore the sync nodes, right? And then do the iterations, and once you get a consistent set of page importances for all the core pages, which is these 19 million pages, then you essentially compute the page ranks for the guys you removed earlier in any which way, more or less linear combinations of the ones that, of the nodes that they are connected to. So it's like these guys, these 19 million nodes are the core guys, and the rest of them are sort of connected to one of these guys, and so they wind up, one or two of these guys, and they're just getting their importance from them. This makes life simpler. But it is clear that you do want to keep, afterwards, you do want to keep the 25 million in the corpus, because they are pages, and some people might actually be looking for them. Okay, you can't ignore all the sync pages out of the consideration, because in fact they may sometimes be the most important pages. In fact, by definition, sync pages are, I mean, something near sync is quite an important page, because I'm so important that other people are pointing to me, and I could care less as to what the other people, that they even exist. Now, if you remove them, then obviously you're dead, because you would never get that page. Okay, so you do bring them back now. Now, having made this solid argument, the question is, if you don't actually have the physical page, that you never crawled it, okay, should you even consider having that? Consider having links to it? What do you got to lose? It's important to know that, people are talking about this place that used to exist before. And now that guy removed the page, and yet people still point to it. There is no there anymore. But why should I lobotomize myself and forget the fact that this place used to exist at one time? Okay? And just before that, have people seen any search engine pointing to a page which doesn't exist, and they will even say have you guys ever seen it? You did. They do it. So in fact, this is very useful, because when you actually, there may be a page there which says, which is exactly the word that you're looking for, and then when you actually say show me, and the page doesn't exist, then you say show me the cached copy, it would say, hey, the page never existed even in cache. It never existed. But people were saying such a page existed, which is useful. It's like Xanadu, which is like Camelot, it's like all these things that never existed. Santa Claus. Santa Claus has no page. And yet, why should we forget him, this poor guy? It has a use. If people think Santa Claus exists and Santa Claus doesn't exist, I'm not saying we should believe in him, but why should search engine just completely remove all mentions to Santa Claus?
But how you get the link structure without crawling all the pages? other pages are not without quality.
It doesn't exist. So the point is, you tried probably. See, if somebody is pointing to this page, they have a URL, right?
Mm-hmm.
You tried to go to that URL. The page no longer exists there. The page no longer exists there. And that still does not mean that you should not, so now the question is, should we have descriptions of things that never existed? And we just argued that yes, why not? I mean, Santa Claus never existed, and we still have descriptions of things. Right? I mean, so. Because for any graph that you currently have, right, I mean, all I am saying is you have crawled, you got 25 pages, right, and you know currently these are the only 25 pages you have whose names you know, including Santa Claus, who is one of the names you know, and you know who is pointing to who, and for guys who are not pointing to anywhere, it could either be that this page actually exists and it's not pointing to anybody, or it could be that you never could, I mean, that page doesn't exist. That means you, I mean, in fact, Google can make distinction on that. You know, it can say it was ever crawled or it was never crawled. Okay? But either way, in this graph, you can tell whether or not there are links coming out of it. And if there are no links coming out, it's a sync node.
How do you know who points to who?
Because the pages are telling you.
Yeah.
In the crawling.
You're
crawling
it.
Yes.
So
No, but look, like we're going through this again. You know about Santa Claus because I'm telling you about Santa Claus, even though Santa Claus doesn't exist. Why do you care that Santa Claus doesn't exist? I'm telling you, you know, I know this guy called Santa Claus, and you know, all the other guys who are getting Christmas presents will say, yeah, there is Santa Claus. Now, you never saw, nobody has seen Santa Claus. Nobody has seen the Bigfoot. Nobody has seen the Elephant Man. No, maybe Elephant Man people have seen. But these are important things, you know, the concept is important. It's not a question of whether it exists or not, and all you don't know is, since you didn't ever see Santa Claus, you don't know what Santa Claus considers as, who Santa Claus considers as his friend, because the guy doesn't exist, okay? But that's fine, but you know who points to Santa Claus. So you know which pages point to which pages, and if you haven't crawled a particular page that's pointed to, so you try to crawl them, but if it doesn't exist, so you could happen, if it is a small search engine, like for example, when we made this ASU crawl, right, you could start from ASU and you can keep crawling the entire world because things are connected outside and outside and outside. At some point of time, the TAs decided that, yeah, you know, I mean, you guys probably don't want to deal with more than some number of pages. So we just artificially stopped. So if, but there are links from these pages from ASU which are outside of ASU. Now those pages may exist or not exist. For right now, you know, if you didn't crawl them, then their status essentially is unknown, you know, whether they exist or not exist. Yes? That's we talked about it during the crawling stages, which is if you keep track of. The idea is if you have seen the change rate of pages over a period of time, then there are like two issues. One is which are the most important pages. The important pages should be crawled faster. And the other is which are the ones that are actually changing. And you take both into account. Remember there was a big discussion on the crawler. There is a picture that we talked about where there's these two queues. And the priority in the first queue is based on the importance of the page as well as how likely is it that it could have changed. You consider its priority based on both. Now what exactly are the numbers? No real clue. Okay.
I have a technical question. How do they handle that? I mean the temporary pages which are generated from time to time.
Yeah.
How do they handle that?
How do they handle meaning what? So for example, there are this all sorts of interesting issues on that, which I think this search engine paper talks about, the Hinginger paper talks about. They're like, first of all, many pages are made just for that particular query, and the page disappears afterwards. Google, in a sense, one of the interesting things is in the beginning, search engines tried to avoid them. They, in fact, saw them as a nuisance. Okay, and then after a while, things like Google essentially started caching. The moment you see it, you cache it. So once you cache it, even if that page disappears, it still exists in the Google cache. So just because, you know, it was shown to some user. Now, what is more interesting now is many databases would like to be linked, would like to be indexed by search engines, because the best way to, if you have some information, unless you are CIA, you would want people to know that you have this information, especially if you want to sell it. Okay, if you have a huge database full of all sorts of interesting facts, and it's not, the search engines only crawl static pages, pages with static URLs. So one of the big issues is these database kind of database backed pages, they are deep web. Essentially, this is the web that doesn't have like a static URL. Okay, now it's in the interest of these databases to be indexed by search engines. So they have found ways of materializing some parts of the database. Materializing means actually making static URLs for them, just so that search engines will have crawled them. So whenever search engine comes, they'll say, come, and basically make up a whole bunch of pages for it that it can eat up and remember. All that matters is next time around, if there's a relevant query, search engines will point to this database page, and then that temporary page will be rematerialized. So the idea is the page really needs to exist only two times. The time when the search engine came, and the time the search engine sent somebody to look. You know, if you are all on parole, I mean, have you been on parole? No, it doesn't look like. I mean, any of you who are on parole, you know, basically when people come and see whether you are at home, you need to be at home. In between, you can be clubs, dancing, and all that. So you just have to figure out when they come to look for you. At that time, you be there. The rest of the time, who cares? Okay. So those two times, if the page exists, then it's as good as a static page. But it's an interesting question. In fact, some number of years back, so there was this classic joke, that, I mean, the Far Side cartoon that I should show you at some point of time. But essentially, in this sub field, things change too fast. Every semester, the world has changed. Okay, so in the beginning, when I was teaching this course, which was not too far long back, you know, a couple of, you know, maybe 3-4 years back, the prevailing wisdom there is, you know, these temporary things are bad things. You know, databases don't want you to index them, and the search engines should avoid indexing them. But now that there is no other way of being known, and if Google or Yahoo doesn't index you, you don't exist. So there is an interesting uneasy truce where people have figured out a way of indexing themselves even though they're a database. Okay. So, but basically, a page that does not exist can come in the top 10 results, right? Basically, we allowed it because anchor text is part of the page which doesn't exist. Okay? So Santa Claus exists, and we know the description of Santa Claus. Santa Claus wears red suit. The guy, for a guy who doesn't exist, he wears red suit, he has this funny white hat, and he's fat, and you know, all that sort of stuff. We know, all because of anchor text. People who talk about Santa Claus seem to talk about it. And so you would get the content similarity non-zero, plus you will also get link importance because everybody is pointing to this Santa Claus guy who doesn't exist. So sure enough, Santa Claus is a happening guy. He's at the top of the importance for certain queries. And I believe that's reasonable. You know. Yes, sir.
About the deep web, I run the paper that sometimes, like now, databases are beginning to, these web database backed websites are trying to provide alternative versions for the search engine robot to crawl.
That's exactly what I was saying. So when the search engine robot comes, so for most people know, and most web servers can differentiate between search engine robots, because they have googlebot.com, yahoobot.com, inkatome.com, etc., and they know who is asking. Okay, so it's like basically, you know, if it is the police knocking on the door, you stop the party, act like a good citizen. If not, you continue the party. That's essentially, you could do that, and in terms of crawling. So that idea has been used in two different ways. One is, you know, in this paper you talked about spoofing and cloaking, where based on what the search, when the search engine bot comes, you show a nice self. And then when search engine bot goes off, you know, I mean, and then somebody else comes, you show all your fun images and try to sell them stuff. Okay, that's one way. But the other way is exactly what these database guys are doing. When the search engine bot comes, they know search engine bots have infinite patience. So they tell them, look, you can bug us as much as you want. We want to show you our entire home. Okay? And then we'll show you this tuple, this tuple, this tuple. Remember all of this so that if there's anybody looking for this, send them to us. Okay? And it's good for their business. But when you go there, they'll only say, here is a form. Fill this form and we'll give you that particular piece that you want. And this is happening all the time right now, because, you know, you go to the page of, let's say, Amazon.com, they'll give you a form that you have to fill. Because if they try to give entire Amazon away to everybody, then they don't get anywhere. You know, the network will stop functioning. And plus, they don't get anywhere. But they do give it away to search engine robots, because there's an advantage to this. Yes.
But if Nicole needs to deal with the form, and I've read somewhere that they do this, it's incredibly difficult. How do they do that? All the combinatorial.
It's not that hard. No, I mean, they have nothing to do. Crawlers don't have much to do, right? I mean, they're just going around crawling. So you can fill in, you know, we crack passwords. Crawlers crack passwords. So why is it hard to fill forms? And more interestingly, so again, the databases that really want to be advertised will help the crawler fill up the forms. Okay? And so, in fact, that's the new thing. In fact, they oftentimes, what they wind up doing is they also provide API, direct API connection. So crawler doesn't even have to go crawl. You know, they just provide the information, you know. So it's interesting, because being indexed by the search engine is the difference between life and death right now. So the world is changing around to help that. We will talk about this sort of issues, obviously, in the second part of the course, where we talk about how to deal with structured data on the web. And we just gave one example, which is convert the structured data into unstructured data so that search engines can show you, which sort of looks like a defeat compared to what we would like to do, which is keep the structured data the way it is and do more interesting query, but that's harder. You know, that too is being done, but, you know, at least in the current stages, more likely we're doing this, which is everybody allowing themselves to be indexed by HTML engines.
Considering the banking the deep web, since they don't contain any other links to some other pages, the domain model of ranking the surface will still hold if a major part of the content is dominated by deep web.
So I didn't catch the question.
The deep web, the database typically doesn't contain a link to another page. Like they are generally the information.
Yeah.
So here we are deciding the ranking of a particular page based on the number of links pointing to that.
If a temporary page starts pointing to other temporary pages, can you get page rank for them, essentially?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, but, you know, I mean, clearly, that's an open question. That is an open question. you know, I don't really know what you can do to deal with it at this point, but it's an interesting question. But again, I actually consider this idea of dealing with structured data by dumping it down into HTML pages as hopefully a blip which will go away and we'll find better ways of dealing with structured data. I mean, it seems so sad to dump down structured data into text. Why? I mean, what is the advantage? Currently, the advantage is that's the only thing we know how to deal with. Deal with very badly, but we know how to deal with it. You know, so, but hopefully it will change soon. Other comments? By the way, one other extra question that you should answer in this feedback thing is whether this kind of discussion sessions are useful or useless. Does it look more like me avoiding teaching? You know, so please do point that out because I have no clue. Okay. Other questions, other comments? Yes? She. Monica Hensinger is a she.
And the second thing there is they put more generalized keywords. Like the example that's given here is, for example, if you're selling a particular model of car, but you just say cars for sale in your
Yeah.
But that seems to me like it's not a drawback. Instead, what we have discussed till now.
No, but basically,
it's not a drawback because users themselves are not giving you specific queries. What we've discussed so far.
Well, it depends. It depends, right? I mean, it's a good point. I mean. Yes, I mean, some people might like other things too, but in general, the moment you start generalizing, so it's like, it's adversarial nature. I mean, a book is written once and it's kept on the shelf. These, you know, these sites are being updated every night. And so they would like people to come to their, I mean, this is done on the conventional marketing, right? I mean, it's like, they'll say, we have great deals on all kinds of fruits, and they might probably have a good deal on like a plum, that's it. Everything else is costly. But you go there all the way, and they say, you know, why do I want to go to a different store? I'll buy something here. You know, we do that currently. But from a search engine's point of view, from a user's point of view, who actually went all the way there to assuming that they might get a great deal on, you know, whatever other fruit, maybe a grapefruit, they would be unhappy. So their precision has reduced. So that's the point she's making. But there is no obvious way of getting away from it because people, in fact, this whole web, in fact, we hopefully might talk about this thing. Many of you guys know about classification and we will talk about it again. And what we need in the web, on the web, is adversarial classification. Okay, that's the classic case that's happening in spam mail, right? You know, originally spam mail people used to use certain words, so classification engines, classifiers would say if you use Nigerian widow in your mail, you know, you'll just be spammed out because even if you said, by the way, don't fall for Nigerian widow mails, they'll still say it's a spam mail. In fact, there was this beautiful story one time. AT&T used to have its own ISP, and then at one time they sent a mail to all their subscribers saying, don't click on these kinds of spam mails, and we, to help you stop this, we are making very good spam checking software, and their spam checking software promptly deleted that mail because, you know. So the interesting thing is that I think, you know, from the point of view of web, it's an arms race. And so what you need is, what can you do when you know that there are people out there to stop search engine from being effective? And they will do that. It's not that they're cheating. It's everybody tries to get ahead, right? And so they're trying to do whatever they can to increase. I mean, some of these things are already passé, right? In the old days when I used to teach this, I will talk about this great idea of putting white font on white background so that people won't see it, but search engines will, you know, see it. And, you know, but the moment it became obvious, it, you know, search engines figured it out. So it's anything is, you know, what happens between bacteria, viruses, and humans or any bigger organisms, it's an arms race. You know, it's like the things never stop. It's like there's an uneasy truce until the next breakthrough occurs, and then you know, keep up with it. There's not too much you can do. other than being continuously smart, whichever side you are on, you know, whether you are trying to sell or. Yes. So the point that he's making is people annotating sites with other words that don't appear on that site itself. Now, in some sense, the old way of doing that was what? How did you annotate before folksonomy existed, before the word folksonomy existed, you still annotated other sites. How did you do that? I'm giving away midterm questions, by the way, but since I said this, I would not use them, but things like this. Yeah. How do you annotate my site? Anchor text. That's what we were doing previously. Folksonomy is nothing but anchor text done at the even deeper level. You can actually go and say, this part of the page is this, this part of the page is this. Okay. Now, just as anchor text, the moment you make the connection between folksonomy and anchor text, you know that all the problems and advantages of anchor text also appear to folksonomy. Like, you know, anchor text could say, I can point to you and say, you know, what a bad page, and you have no control over me. Okay. But on the other hand, hopefully, if enough people are pointing to you, some people, and if everybody says yours is a bad page, then perception is reality. And so you would be sunk. You know, if not, the law of averages makes sure that you would, the right truth about you probably would be annotated. Now, the classic case of annotations in the Google is Google Co-op. Okay, so the way, if you say lymphoma or diabetes, you get that thing on the top. Right, the way this is people, you know, would go and annotate some pages with extra tags. And those annotation tags are given higher weight, even higher than the anchor text. So it's like saying there are some judges in this world, and whatever they say about people's pages, that counts even more than other judges. Okay. Now, the way Google Co-op works is you have to sign up, and probably have to give them your passport number, etc., and then they'll trust you and they'll let you start adding these tags. But unfortunately, those kinds of approaches don't seem to scale well. In the first way of losing more than 90% of the people is to say, sign up. Right, that's it, then they leave. Okay. Again, remember, Google Mail was a great toy that they invented so that you would stuck there with your sign up, and then they can figure out what you're doing. Okay. Other comments? Yes. What do you mean? I don't understand.
The link quality, the quality of the link.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the time you spend on the click, but PageRank seems to not consider this kind of information.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, no, they're saying they should, and we do know some, like if you do query specific link quality, for example, Authorities Hubs looks at the anchor text surrounding the link and sees whether the link is connected to the query or not. You know, that is an example. What else can you do?
Maybe
the link is the link. You know, it's not like there's a bigger link versus a smaller link. They're all href links. Okay.
Maybe you can include other kind of information. For example, if the query about disease, any information come from like a hospital, some size of hospital is maybe much more important than from a random.
That's a good point. So Authorities Hub only looks at the anchor text surrounding the link, but you are saying you should somehow take the topic-specific reputation of the page Yes, go ahead. But remember that page rank doesn't even do the first thing. Okay. The tricky issue seems to be to get people to feel discontent, you know, frustrated with current search engines. And they're not right now because, you know, Google stock seems to be improving. And as long as it improves, this is not going to happen. You know, we can talk about it unless you start your company, which is good. But, you know, yeah.
I think then they would need a combination of search and classification. They would need to classify all the pages.
Yeah.
Some sort of ontology, like the Open Directory project or something else. And then that would be possible.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, I agree. Yes.
How much of an importance
would
external links add to a page? For example, like the page and the author is not itself added a few things, but then they need to advertise
the
page. So their impact contributing to the page.
Yeah, I mean, currently they do have higher weight, but the whole notion of externality is very suspect because you have this pyramid structure that is possible. I can make a page farm, you know, which whose only interest is to point to you. You know, so you see, in scientific literature, self-citations don't count for nothing. The only citations that matter are other people citing your work. So if you cite to your previous work, it doesn't increase the importance of your work. Of course you like your work, you know, but it's easy to capture that. But even in scientific literature, one thing you can do is you cite my work, I'll cite your work. And then we both will become famous. But unfortunately, even if scientists become famous, they'll make maybe $10 extra per month. So it doesn't really make that much difference. But, you know, this business of external versus internal, once you can throw in the adversarial nature, it's very hard to put it in black and white terms. Okay, so it looks to me that there are 5 minutes left, unless there are people. Oh my God, what did I do? Oh God. Let's see. There are a couple of things that. Let's just make sure that we looked at each of these. Do people know, I mean, you should definitely know, these are some of the points I believe are different from what you may have thought anatomy of search engines paper would be like versus what they're actually doing, and you should make sure that you look at this. By the way, one thing that we did not talk about in the class is page synopsis. So one of the useful things is, I mean, I think the TA is allowing you to just give the URL. That's like the ugly way to justify that the page is relevant to the query. Okay. What all search engines do is they take the piece of the text that has the words that you are looking for. And it's an art form. In fact, they try to find reasonable amount of sites on both sides and then point that piece. And sometimes they might take an excerpt from here and excerpt from here and show that. Okay. You should definitely try to do something like that. You know, it's not hard, but that's when it becomes a real search engine. Okay, the synopsis, page synopsis, is a classic case of not just doing it, but making users believe that you did it. Okay, I mean, Google's page rank importance does not change whether it gives synopsis of the page or not, summary of the page or not. But people believing it is going to change significantly. So you have to give some justification to the user, especially in general when users don't know what they're looking for and they give imprecise queries. You give answers, you have to argue that these are actually answers. And that involves sort of convincing them. And think of page summary as a justification as to why the user should take, not just take my word for it, but here is a little more piece of information about the page as to why this is relevant to you, okay? And so that's something that you should keep in mind. Does Google support, in the anatomy of search engine, does it support proximity queries? How is it taking care of proximity queries? You should look at that. It's there's a way in which they do it, but you should make sure you know. Do they use TF and IDF? I mean, these are the kinds of things I was hoping people will check, because this is the theory we talked about, and you know, are they using it, are they just making their own theory, or they're doing variants of this. Okay, that's something that you should make sure you understand. And do they normalize? And if not, why not? Okay. These are basically the things from the Hunziker paper about the spam and duplicate hosts and so on. So I don't see too much of a point in starting a new topic right now. So I will start clustering next week. Do make a comment as to whether these sort of things are useful or not. I have to tell you that I'm very jealous of my time, and I hate doing this. So if you want this sort of thing to be done, you better tell me that it's useful for you. Okay, I'd like to talk. I mean, I listen to my voice, and I think it sounds much nicer than yours. So if you think it's useful at all, then you know, you should tell that. If it's not useful, great, because that's what I think it is probably, by just my bias. So we won't do it again. Okay. Next time we will do clustering, I'll give you a link to the paper that you should read. Next week mostly we'll complete the clustering. That would be done right before the midterm, the spring break. Okay. Fill that stuff and give it to Tiffany.